Welcome, everyone, episode 338 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have actual NBA news to discuss. We are going to hit on the schedule release of the seeding games that came out on Friday night. We'll also talk about a couple of the players who have opted out of the Orlando return, and then some of the transactions that have gone down over the past few days since the transaction window opened. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can, in our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very Danish cone host. That's all I got today. Mort Jensen, how's it going, Mort?
It's going well. I can sense that you're a bit tired from the two-week moving period.
Yeah, it is exhausting. We are in the home stretch of getting settled in. I just need to buy a car, and then I'm just going to turn my brain off for a week. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. You're buying a house, and then you're buying a car, yet when it comes to like recording equipment, you're still working off a laptop. There we go.
Yep. Well, as we learned this week, there is only, and I was telling you right before we started, we only have one functioning cable jack in our entire house. It happens to be in the basement. So even if I wanted to be on a desktop right now, it wouldn't be of any use because my router is two floors away.
Oh, well, so this is going to be a transition period for us in the next couple of months until you get everything settled. I should also give a warning because here kids have graduated from high school, and that means that they're driving around in wagons being very, very wasted. So if you hear, a bunch of kids just hollering through the town, very, very drunk off their ass, that's why.
Okay, good. Yeah, so apologies in advance if our sound quality sucks this episode. I'm still trying to figure out where the best room is in this house to record, and where it's got a bunch of drunk teenagers outside his window.
Yeah, so it's perfect. Couldn't be better. By the way, so I have to ask this, and this is from Bruce, actually.
Oh, okay.
How's the guest room?
Oh, that is set up. We even bought curtains today. Very exciting. Nice. So, yeah, the only thing is there is a not functioning TV in there, but by the time anyone actually stays in that room, that will change because I have little converters coming Monday. So
nice. Yeah, he was asking me when we could go over and visit you guys. And I was like, so regarding the COVID situation in the United States, approximately 2025, I'm thinking.
Right. Yeah. I'm guessing he has not been paying attention, much like the NBA, to the news out of Florida recently.
Boy, that was just over the past 3 days, seeing the NBA kind of gear up for Orlando and seeing all the reports coming out of Florida. Yeah. That has been a ride, my friend. My God.
Well, like, honestly, I haven't been on Twitter almost at all for now more than a week. So, like, I feel somewhat disconnected from the day-to-day or like hour-to-hour updates that are going on. Like, I know Florida cases are booming, but I'm seeing all the people like giving updates about whether the season's going to be canceled, and I can't tell whether this is just speculation or whether it's a thing that's actually being discussed. Like, from everything, from all the reports that I saw on Friday, Adam Silver is like, we see everything that's happening, but we feel good about our plan. So like, we're still full go. It is concerning to say the least, to see the news coming out of Florida lately, and fingers crossed they turn it around pretty soon. Or I think we need to have a very different discussion about the NBA, between now and when the season is supposed to start.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and here's what scares me the most. The start of the season is over a month away. Mm-hmm. A lot can happen in a month, especially in Florida, because there seems to be this movement of people believing that it infringes on their rights as Americans to wear a mask. Right. And that's become a whole thing. That's become a whole thing. And not just in Florida, of course, but it's very prevalent there. So, I mean, at some point, I think the NBA would have to, like, just kind of ease up, like, midway through July if things just keep worsening and ask themselves, are we really doing this? Is this really what we're going to do? I cannot imagine it's just full steam ahead, no worries whatsoever.
Right, right. Or, I mean, maybe they go full steam ahead. Like, at this point, you know, we've been talking for months now, and you and I were both on the same page for a while that we just did not think the season was going to restart. Then they come up with this Florida plan, you know, earlier in April and May, like, the curve had started to go down a little bit, and we were cautiously optimistic, okay, maybe they can pull this thing off. They have the plan in place. They have the agreement. They have an actual agreement between the players and the team owners in the league, which they did not have as of a couple weeks ago. So that part of it is handled. Now, yeah, I mean, it begs the question of, you know, I think there's so much money riding on the line, and that's what all of this ultimately comes down to, no matter how many times the NBA tries to say, well, there's a moral reason we're coming back, or it gives a lift to the... No, there's $2 billion riding on the line. If there wasn't $2 billion, you would not be coming back. So you could save your moral preachiness for someone else. Stop pretending. It's about money. That's great. It's a lot of money. I don't blame the NBA or players for wanting to come back to, you know, if you're thinking of losing millions of dollars if you're a player, or hundreds of millions if you're a team owner of the league or whatever. I get it. So I think it's coming back almost regardless of the data at this point. But I do wonder whether it forces the NBA to kind of reevaluate, oh, okay, we weren't going to test all the Disney workers every day, or we were going to let certain Disney workers come in contact with players, but now we have to have intermediaries who are, you know, quarantined with the players, who the Disney workers can contact these people, and then these people come in contact with the actual players. I don't know. I'm sure there's still a lot to work out in terms of the reality of this protocol.
Right.
But I mean, we've seen, you know, players are already starting to report back. The news came out sometime in the last week. I don't know exactly when, that 16 players have already tested positive for COVID. I think 302 that were tested. There are going to be more positive tests between now and the time the season starts. It's almost inevitable. There's probably going to be a positive test after the season starts, and how the NBA reacts to that is far more important than anything we're going to talk about today, but there's no way to know until this actually happens.
Well, and I mean, it's not just the Disney employees that we need to worry about. I mean, Jabari Parker was tested positive for coronavirus, and I think it was today, you know, images popped up on Twitter with him out playing tennis with people. Like, So I mean, it isn't just, I think we're doing everyone a disservice if we're sitting here and we're basically putting it on, like, the Disney staff. Like, players have to be responsible as well, as do head coaches and assistant coaches and whoever travels with the team. Like, this has to be a joint effort with everyone being responsible. And, you know, I mean, can you and I sit here and argue that NBA players, every one of them, will act the right way? I can't do that.
No. Will they actually abide by the campus bubble, whatever you want to call it? Will they stay quarantined? Hopefully. I mean, you tell me, have you seen anything? Is there, like, has the NBA come out and said what the penalty is for leaving the campus, other than you have to isolate for however long?
If they have, I haven't noticed, because as you're well aware, when it comes to, like, the return of the NBA season, I have not paid much attention to it, because I still think it's somewhat pie in the sky. I know that they're basically planning to do everything right now, but I just kind of think it's all, like, somewhat pales in comparison to what else is going on right now. The NBA returning, in my eyes, is more of a luxury than anything else. In terms of, like, it's nice to have. It's not need to have. So right. I've just not paid as much attention. So whenever Vogue or Shams have, like, they have been tweeting their balls off in terms of, like, the return of the season, and I have basically just, like, swiped them away when I got notifications, because like, it's not a big topic at this point. This is, like I said before, it's over a month away. Florida is burning and crashing, And, you know, we have players testing positive and apparently not being very mature about it. Also, some of them, you know, players are dropping out. I know there was a deadline for dropping out, but things can happen from, you know, from now and a month away. You know, mm-hmm. you know, stuff happens. We don't know. There's just so many balls in the air at this point where I'm just like, you know what? When we get into like the middle of June and it's a few weeks away, then I'll pick it up. That's when I'll pick it up and I'll go into it and I'll be like, okay, so what are the rules here? Because my God, this one topic has dominated the news for what feels like 3 months. At some point, I just don't care anymore.
Right. I mean, no, it's a completely fair point. Like, no one would label NBA players essential workers. Like, you're absolutely right that it is a luxury for the league to come back. It is not essential to anyone other than NBA players and NBA workers. NBA, I mean, hell, the NBA workers aren't even gonna, you know, concession workers aren't going to be able to go to these games, like, right. sell concessions because there's going to be no fans there. So they're losing money either way. The teams are going to lose money either way. Like, they're just trying to stem the bleeding financially, which I get. And then, you know, some players are going back with the motivation of to actually win a championship. Like LeBron James, I'm convinced it is not just about the money for him. Giannis, the same deal. But you can't tell me that Bradley Beal is going to play in Orlando for any other reason than to recoup some of the money he lost. Like, he knows he's not getting to the playoffs. He knows right. there's no reason for that team to be going to this campus in the first place other than stem some financial bleeding.
Yep, pretty much.
So on that uplifting note, Mort, let's talk about the schedule that just came out on Friday night. That
yes.
We'll have to at least assume, I mean, if the season does go off without a hitch, this is the schedule for the 8 seeding games. They will tip off July 30th, I believe, and then play will conclude on August 14th. Games are basically like all day, every day, which is awesome. I know you especially are excited to actually watch games at a reasonable hour. For you, it will still be the night, but at least it won't be like 3 in the morning. So that's a win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if the season comes back... I'm going to continue with that line.
Please do.
Yeah, I'm going to have games at 7 p.m. That's when you guys get it. It's wonderful. Yeah.
I mean, and I just moved from Central Time to East Time, so I've lost an hour effectively. So I'm also excited to have games.
Oh, I completely forgot about that. You know what that means? That means that you and I, when we plan for when we have to meet up. It is going to get bad at some point. At one point, one of us is going to be an hour off.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It'll happen during those like two weird weeks of daylight savings time where they're not aligned. So look forward to that, everyone. It seemed like some of the big topics of conversation that I've noticed coming out of this schedule release, a lot of them were predictable, but let's start with the 8 seed in the West and the potential challengers for the 8 seed in the West, because that was a storyline coming into once they announced the season was coming back, and then once they announced how this format would work with these 8 seeded games with the potential play-in tournament. I know a lot of Pelicans fans in particular are fixated on, hey, we were supposed to have a really, really easy rest of season schedule, and the Grizzlies were supposed to have a really, really hard rest of season schedule. So it would be pretty unfair if, you know, somehow these things balanced out. So now we see the list of opponents for both teams, and it did not balance out. The Grizzlies have a brutal – they start with Portland, the Spurs, and Pelicans, and then have Utah, but then end with OKC, Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee. Like, that's pretty rough. I mean, I guess – if you're a Grizzlies fan, you could pin your hope on that last Milwaukee game is going to be totally meaningless for the Bucks. So maybe Giannis doesn't play a ton. Maybe it's just a tune-up game for them for the playoffs. But even still, I mean, that's a rough slate compared to the Pelicans. They start with Utah, then they have the Clippers, Grizzlies. Then it is Kings, Wizards, Spurs, Kings, Magic. not exactly a murderer's row.
I just want them to lose to Memphis just to see Twitter go amok.
Like the Pelicans lose that third game? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to see it happen because, look, here's the thing. This has been the most petty fight on NBA Twitter over the past few months.
Oh, yes.
Honestly, I get it. Like, you want Zion in there, and you know, Memphis wants Ja. I get it. Okay. I don't care. This is the most dumb big talking point there is. Like, yeah, okay. So the Pelicans had an easy schedule. Memphis didn't. Fine. When the ball tips off, everything's in play. We've seen teams that come into a season expecting to be good early on and are outright terrible and vice versa. I just this idea of having this notion of we can predict that we're going to win X amount of games, we can do this and that. No, look, the NBA is a league where the worst team can beat the best team on any given night. So I just don't put so much stock into the whole strength of schedule thing. I really don't. Not that it's pointless. It's certainly not pointless. There's definitely merit in the idea because when you look at team records and all that, but everything comes down to matchups, ultimately. Mm-hmm. So if the Pelicans, who on paper have an easy schedule, if they just match up really, really poorly against, let's say, Washington, then what, right?
I don't think you're going to have to worry about that one.
No, okay. Spurs, maybe. I don't know, but just the general idea. I don't think it's like it just seems like one of those situations where they're counting their chickens a little bit too soon.
That's totally fair, and I think especially given this layoff, I mean, it's been by the time play starts again, it will have been 4.5 months since they played competitive basketball. I know they have like the 3 preseason games or whatever, but yeah, I mean, we can't just assume that every team is going to pick up right where they left off. Like, it's impossible to predict what shape these teams are going to be in. And these are going to be very important games. Like, you know, you only have an 8-game window to either improve your seeding or get into the playoffs. So you don't have much margin for error here. If you're the Pelicans, like if you stumble against Utah and the Clippers early, and then that all of a sudden that Memphis game may be a de facto elimination game for you, despite how easy the rest of your schedule looks.
Yeah. Yeah. We are definitely going to see teams where we expect them to just follow suit of what they did in the regular season. And it's virtually not the same team.
Right.
Because this is more than an off season that we've gone through.
Yeah.
4.5 months. I don't even remember how, you know, the season wraps up in June normally, and then it's start October with the preseason games. Okay. So this is a significant time off. Like, I had this thought yesterday. Like, the Bucks relied a lot Milwaukee's bench relied a lot on George Hill being a flamethrower, right? Like, he was hitting everything this year. If he comes back now after a 5.5 month layoff and is like goes from being a flamethrower to just being sort of average, does that change the outlook of Milwaukee? There are so many small items at play, I think, that this return is going to be very, very interesting in terms of who still got it, who still has the same sort of chemistry. You know, who took a step up, because maybe there are some players who are second year guys, first year guys, who kind of looked at this, I mentioned this before, as sort of an off season and have come back drastically better.
Right.
I mean, theoretically, we have no idea if Ja Morant is going to come back as virtually the best point guard in the NBA. We have no idea.
Right.
Like, the odds are not on me on that one. Don't get me wrong, but we have no idea.
And these seeding games will mean different things to different teams. Like, Milwaukee is entering play with a 6.5-game lead over the Raptors for the number one seed in the East. So if Milwaukee wins 2 games, they've clinched number one. You choose your own side of the court or some nonsense, home court advantage. I forget the exact specifics, but like, There's no real home court advantage, so they don't really care if they have quote unquote home court advantage over right. Lakers or the Clippers in the finals or whatever. So, like, you know, Milwaukee's late in their Grizzlies schedule. Toronto and Boston are late as well. If all three of those teams have effectively clinched their seeding, again, who's to say that they're going to be going all out here? So I think it's totally valid to point out that we don't really know what what any team's strength of schedule is. You can look at, okay, you know, they're going against a bunch of non-playoff teams, or they're going against a bunch of like top four seeds, and you can note that. And I think the Blazers were the other one in that race because, you know, now that LaMarcus Aldridge, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, now that he's out, I know the Spurs signed Tyler Zeller, big deal. But, like, I just don't see any way the Spurs are in the real race for that eight seed. The Kings have two games against the Pelicans in these seeding games, so I guess if they win both, they could be, because they otherwise get Spurs, Magic, Dallas, Brooklyn, Houston, and the Lakers. The Lakers, their last game, and the Lakers may be in a similar spot with the Bucks, where they may not have anything to play for, and maybe they play, you know, LeBron James plays 15 minutes in that game. So I think the Kings are still in the periphery of this eight seed conversation, but Pelicans are probably favored over them. And then the Blazers, in theory, are one of the biggest losers out of any team from this schedule release, because their schedule is Memphis, Boston, Houston, Denver, Clippers, Sixers, Dallas, Brooklyn. That is, woof. On paper, that looks rough. And they're back-to-back as Clippers and Sixers, which does not seem ideal. But again, who knows what these teams are going to look like? So maybe Dame just goes full flamethrower and goes off for 50 points a game, and it doesn't matter who they're facing.
I mean, I would take that, because that is the only level of entertainment we're going to be getting otherwise from the Blazers in all this. Like, this is where things just get kind of ridiculous. Like, why have them in there given everything? Like, they are so behind. You know, Trevor Reese is not going to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, Dame was also kind of saying, you know, I don't really want to do this. Unless he had like a legitimate shot at getting to the playoffs. I mean, he would have to average 50, I think.
Right. For them to have a chance.
Yeah. This just seems like, yeah, I don't know. There are definitely like a handful of teams where I'm looking at where I just could go, why? Why did you just not? I get it. They want to recoup some money. It's fine. I was a big proponent of, if the season was to return, just kind of slot in the playoffs and then be done with it. And I know the Pelicans fans are going to be screaming, well, that's not fair. Well, none of this is fair. None of this is fair anyway. We've talked about that at length. Like, none of this is fair. We'll see. It could be, let me say this though. It could be fantastic if the Blazers just kind of surprise everyone and just won everything. Mm. That'd be great. I don't think it's feasible, but sure. I mean, the fact that there is a chance of an upside or what do you call it?
Like a Cinderella run?
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. Yeah. Like that on the surface, that could be fun. And again, we don't know the state of the teams, how they're in. And yeah, I guess the unknown element is an attractive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel, you know, if you're asking like the, why are they bringing these teams back question, the Wizards, Suns, Spurs are obvious ones, but hell, I feel that way about the Magic and the Nets too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those teams are the reason that just the reseed 1-16 idea would have been more appealing, because it's like, okay, cool. The Magic are going to be lined up for their ceremonious 4-game beatdown against the Bucks in the first round.
Right.
It's going to be the token NBA TV series. Wonderful.
Yeah. By the way, I think it was Vegas who put some championships odds on, you know, the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Brooklyn higher than Indiana.
Wasn't that just because like people bet up the Nets? because they thought there was maybe a chance that KD and Kyrie were coming back?
That's a good point. I actually don't know. I just looked at that and went, wow. Because, I mean, we agree that the Pacers are a significantly better basketball team right now, right?
Oh, wait, I mean, without question. Yeah, I think I saw some stories like when the season first went on hiatus or when it, like when they started to talk about it coming back, but it wasn't official that KD and Kyrie were out. A lot of people started like just throwing, some flyer bets on the Nets, basically just like, if these guys come back, then, I'll throw $20 at whatever odds they are. And like that has a better chance of cashing than my Pacers ticket, which also has no chance of cashing, but
right.
had worse odds.
People still realize that KD had the Achilles tear, right?
Yeah, I know. But, optimism, right? There's always injury optimism in both real and fantasy sports, and it almost always comes back to bite you. But yeah. We never learn.
So can we talk real briefly about Dallas for a second?
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I'm pretty excited. They had one of the best offensive seasons ever in NBA history. And now they had some time off. When the season ended, Luka was struggling with a thumb injury. That should have been healed up and ready to go now. So he should come into this 100%. And I know you can say that about a lot of players. So it's not like me trying to single him out as just a sole case. Obviously, a lot of players are. But Luka at full health, I mean, that's a 30-point triple-double guy. I can't imagine, it seems like when we're talking about like the championship contenders here, we're talking about the Lakers, the Bucks, the Rockets to some extent. But the Mavericks, we seem to have somehow just kind of forgotten about or put them to the side. And my question is, why? Why are we so certain that they're not right in there?
Are we certain?
No. I mean, I'm not. I certainly think they could be. But when you look at like the general consensus and the teams that people are talking about, Dallas is rarely one of the teams that is brought up.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's just a lack of faith in everything other than Luka and Kristaps, basically.
But why though? Their supporting cast was outstanding.
Yeah, I think it's honestly like a lack of name brand recognition. Just because those guys are Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxi Kleber, like all of these guys, Seth Curry. All very good and all played their role very well.
Yeah.
But they aren't household names like some of the other guys on contenders, like a Patrick Beverley or a Montrezl Harrell, where they don't have those either standout skills. Like Curry has the shooting, but it's just like Kleba's just a good all around solid player. Same with Dorian Finney-Smith, but he's not like an elite sharpshooter or whatever. Also, maybe Dwight Powell's injury factoring in here. Willie Cauley-Stein is also now opting out of the restart. So they're even thinner up front than they were. But yeah, I wouldn't put Dallas on the tier of the Clippers or the Lakers. But anyone else in the West is in that next tier as far as I'm concerned. I don't know that the Houston Rockets or Denver Nuggets have appreciably better championship odds than the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting at. I understand that you cannot catapult them into like the Lakers or Clippers territory. But again, I've been operating under this assumption that, having 4.5 months off essentially and just healing up and maybe even taking that time to focus on weaknesses and trying to iron out their games. I know that a lot of players live in apartment buildings and thus haven't had a chance to go all out. But, Luka went back to Slovenia. He was back there. I don't think for a damn second, knowing full well how Europeans operate, that he was staying in an apartment at all. I have a feeling that the Luka we're going to see when the league returns is one that's improved.
I could totally believe that.
Yeah. No, I just find it odd that we aren't really talking about it. When we talk about championship teams, we always talk about having like supporting cast that steps up, not necessarily name brand kind of guys. Mm-hmm. And there's like the perfect example of this year. It's Dallas, I think. Everyone's just playing their role so great. I mean, you could argue that the only other team that's really done that to that level is the Celtics, who's also right up there, at least in the East.
Right. Yeah, well, if you want, let's go to the East, and we could start with the Celtics and the Raptors, because they were a pair of teams that the Celtics made out pretty well. If you're, you know, based on hypothetical strength of schedule, anyway, they start with Milwaukee, which is not ideal. They've got Toronto in there too, but their other six are Portland, Miami, Brooklyn, Orlando, Memphis, Washington. So that seems like a pretty easy slate, especially compared to the Raptors, who start with the Lakers, then have Miami, Orlando, Boston, Memphis, Milwaukee, Philly, Denver.
Yeah.
That seems pretty rough. I mean, the Celtics are three games behind the Raptors in the race for the number two seed right now. So they have a good bit of ground to make up, but if they win the head-to-head game, that chops one of those three games off the block already. There's at least a world, you know, a chance that the Celtics jump the Raptors, the number two seed, which is a big difference. I mean, that's the difference from one of Miami, Indiana, Philly in the first round to one of Orlando or Brooklyn.
Mm.
That's basically a first round bye.
Yeah, it is. Here's the thing, though. I kind of trust Toronto to get through this. I think people are still sleeping on them so much. Like, I saw some of the reactions just initially to their schedule. And the funny thing is, you know, the people who are really, really nervous about it, they weren't Raptors fans. Like, I saw a lot of Raptors fans go, oh, this is fine. This is all good. I obviously also saw some in the other camp. But there's a strong belief in this team, and they played so damn well this year. I am not going to sit here and look at that schedule and go, oh, man, they're cooked. Like, no, they could take the Lakers. They could. Yeah. They could take the Heat game. Orlando should be a shoe-in. I mean, the Boston game, that could also be there. Same for Memphis. Like, the one game I would have a little bit issue with is Milwaukee.
Yeah, especially – tough one. It's on the second night of their one back-to-back, too.
Yeah, that one is probably, you know, difficult. Mm-hmm. Philly can go either way as well. I don't think they necessarily match up all too well with them. And then Denver is also a big one because, you know, when you have Jokic, who could destroy you in whatever capacity he wants to, that's also pretty significant. But outside, I see a lot of winnable games. I mean, I'm not sitting here and just kind of saying, oh, that's an automatic L to the Lakers, for example. Right. I'm just not, because they're that good, and it's time we recognize that.
Yeah, and the Lakers, as we'll address when we get to some of the opt-outs, I mean, them without Avery Bradley, it's not like them without Anthony Davis or them without LeBron James, but Avery Bradley played a pretty important role on that team, so... Again, looking at the strength of schedule matters only to the extent that, okay, well, we also have to factor in who's actually going to be playing in these games. Like, the Lakers might not be as strong as they look just based on their record.
Right. I mean, I assume that they're going to sign J.R. Smith. I don't remember if that's official, but that's definitely something they've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the Avery Bradley replacement.
Right.
And sure, I mean, you could argue that Smith gives them, you know, at least some more dynamic shooting, but he doesn't give you the defense. He doesn't give you the patience. He doesn't give you the leadership. He doesn't give you the on-court, like, calming presence that Bradley does. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many factors that go into this where I've seen that people basically say, oh, okay, you can just replace this guy with this guy, it'll be fine. But that's when you forget about, like, the personality aspect that comes into this, I think. Especially in a bubble setup. My God. I mean, everything is going to be so delicate, you know, compared to normal NBA seasons, that I have to assume that team chemistry is by far the more important thing nowadays compared to like a normal season. Consider the circumstances.
Yeah, you're going to have potentially Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith on the same team. That almost speaks for itself. But yeah. I mean, yeah, Bradley was serving as their de facto point guard. I mean, like LeBron James was actually handling those responsibilities, and then Bradley was just defending primary ball handlers. But, you know, he started in a grand majority, if not, yeah, I mean, he missed some time early in the year. But, yeah, he started in most of their games this year.
Right.
And, like, their other starters were Danny Green, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and then JaVale McGee. So, sure, can you put Deion Waiters or J.R. Smith in the starting lineup in place of him? Sure, I guess so. Yeah. And, like, LeBron is definitely the full-time point guard. But as you said, neither one of those guys is giving you the defense. And the alternative is you put Rondo in the starting lineup, and Lakers fans are going to start binge drinking right when they hear that part of the podcast.
You were probably moving when this came out. I don't know if you saw the video.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man, this was great. So there was a workout video with Rondo, right? And he was trying to, you know, he was in the middle of the court. Or inside the three-point line, rather, and he was like throwing behind-the-back passes to people who were spread out all across the court. And Lakers fans were like, oh my God, look at the way that he just like wraps this pass around his back and like hits this guy like so many feet away. And here's the thing. Not one of the passes were like right in the pocket. Everyone had to like stretch out to catch the ball. Like they were horrible, horrible passes.
Great.
Which was just like, and then, you know, of course the smart Lakers fans were like, oh no, this is ugly. This is not good.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, the Lakers are going to have basically, I guess they could put KCP in the starting lineup instead, but I don't know. They're going to have like three of the same archetype of player.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. And let me just preface this by saying I don't think that the Lakers are necessarily going to be like a significantly worse team. It's not like this is going to make or break them, I think. But you know, there are just players once in a while who have the right mentality, who offer like some of the things that the superstars don't, that is very influential to a potential championship run. And Avery Bradley, in my perspective, seems to be that guy, at least for the Lakers, given how he played this year and how he delivered and the role that he had. Like, he was deeply, deeply ingrained into the fabric of that team in terms of, like, the sets and the system. And so removing that, it's just a little bit problematic. I don't think it's so easy. You can just say, oh, we're going to swap this guy with J.R. Smith or Deion Waiters or giving more minutes to KCP. I just don't think it's that simple. And that doesn't go solely for the Lakers. It goes for everyone. Like every team in there, like the Spurs are not going to, you know, get Tyler Seller to duplicate Marcus Aldridge's production. By the way, Tyler Seller, I just noticed, is only 30 years old. Does that mean that the Spurs look at him as like a future piece? Is he a prospect in their eyes?
He's their next great center.
Right? Yeah. Like, look, they are looking at him going, he can play another 15 years.
Right. I mean, honestly, based on whatever is in the water down there, he might genuinely be able to.
Oh, God.
The other big storyline in the East that I, you know, another predictable one, but one we need to discuss briefly, is the race for the 5 seed. The Sixers were supposed to have a very easy schedule, had the season not been suspended. Lo and behold, they start with Indiana, which is, I mean, that might be the most critical game on their schedule, just because they are currently tied with the Pacers at 39-26. Then they get Spurs, Wizards, Magic, Blazers, Suns, and then end with the Raptors and Rockets. So in theory, you know, start with the Pacers and then have 5 pretty winnable games. That said, the Pacers also have, I mean, they start with the Sixers, and then it's Wizards, Magic, Suns, Lakers, 2 against Miami, and Houston. So, in theory, slightly tougher, but, I mean, both teams are getting at least Wizards, Orlando, and Phoenix. So, you know,
right.
Both teams should have pretty easy times against those teams in particular. This goes back to my fundamental question, though. Should these teams almost want the 6 seed instead of the 5?
Oh, in terms of, like, who they avoid?
Yeah, because, like, in theory, you're probably going to get Miami in the first round if you're the 5. But right. Then you're definitely getting Milwaukee in the second round.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're the 6, you're probably getting one of Toronto or Boston, most likely Boston. But then you get whichever other team, Toronto or Boston, in the second round. So you're dodging the Bucks until the conference finals.
I mean, theoretically, yes. But here's my question about that. Ultimately, if a team wants to win the championship, they have to go through these teams either way, right?
Yeah, in theory. I mean, unless, you know, knock on wood, like, nothing will happen to any player and everyone will stay healthy. But delaying a matchup at least, you know, raises the possibility that someone gets hurt or someone gets COVID or whatever and has to miss a future matchup.
Yeah, okay. So that's all fair. I just always have had a hard time understanding, you know, the need to delay certain things.
Like, sure.
If you are a championship contender, like, you are going and you're serious about it, you have to go through everyone. Ultimately, mm-hmm. you will have to go through the biggest of the best teams in your conference and in supposedly the other team's conference to actually raise the damn banner. So for me, where I'm sitting, like, if you are actively trying to avoid a certain team, I would actually argue that you're coming in with a psychological disadvantage. Mm. I really would. Because if you're trying to avoid that, what's your mindset? That we're supposedly not as good as them?
Mm.
Well, that's one game you can lose immediately just off of having that mentality.
Yeah, that's a completely fair point.
I mean, I realize I'm being a little bit harsh, and I understand, like, the strategic element of it. Of course I do, but
right.
I mean, do you think it seemed like Milwaukee cares one bit who they get?
Oh, no. Yeah, they know regardless, they're going to be the one. They're going to have a cakewalk in the first round, and whoever emerges from the 4 or 5, no, I don't think they care.
Right, and I would argue the same about the Clippers, even though they're probably not going to take the first seed.
Right. Yeah.
I just think, regardless of who you are, if you want the ring, you shouldn't care. There shouldn't be this concern about who's my next matchup. It should be, you know, to get the ring, you have to come through us.
Right.
That's, and I realize that's a bit of a more emotional perspective than normal, but yeah, That's how I look at it, really. I think all the, like, the conjecture about, hey, let's see if we can avoid this. Let's see if we can swing it our way. So I sort of get that. I get that more when you're actually tanking, to be honest with you. Like, hey, let's see if we can lose this game because maybe we have a higher chance of getting a franchise player who'll win us 5 championships over the next 15 years. Like, that I get because that is, like, in the long term view. But if you're in it to win it, you shouldn't care. It should just be, okay, next team up. This is what I always liked about Damian Lillard whenever he's asked about, like, hey, are you trying to position yourself? I'm like, no. No. I don't care. Just bring them on. I'll step back and hit a 35-footer in their face to end the entire series. I don't care. I'll just do it.
Right. Yeah. No, you're saying basically, like, you have a loser's mentality if you are actually
to some extent, yes. I don't want to sit here and call any team a loser for having this mentality. I understand that teams internally are definitely strategizing and mm-hmm. trying to lay out some sort of scenario where they know what they have. Also for preparation purposes, which I totally understand is very, very crucial. I mean, you know, having that at your disposal is great. But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you just gotta kind of play the cards that you're dealt. And like I said earlier, when the ball tips off, like, you don't know. Again, this is the NBA. Every insane thing that that can happen has happened. The only thing that hasn't happened yet is a team coming back from 0-3, rather. Like, that's the only thing that hasn't happened. This league, I love the unpredictability of it. And I understand that when you're actually betting on NBA games, apparently or just sports in general, the NBA is apparently the one that has the highest success rate because it just averages out that way.
Right.
But even so, I think when it comes to a playoff scenario, you just kind of have to throw so many things out the window and just, it sounds really harsh, but just go win.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's fair. I mean, the only other incentive from the Sixers' perspective, and this is very small in comparison, is they have the top 20 protected pick from OKC. Right now it would convey, but if OKC gets pummeled over these 8 seeding games, it might not matter either way. I mean, there may be a scenario wherein the Sixers could tank those last few games and ensure they get the pick, or they can compete and possibly lose the pick. Mm-hmm. But it's a like high 20s pick in a weak draft anyway. So I don't think they are going to go into these games saying we are going to tank, especially given the slate of opponents they have. If they get to that Toronto Houston's, at the end of their schedule and say, oh, okay, if we lose these two games, we're definitely going to get the pick. And we're so far, the odds of us reaching the 5 seed at this point are almost out of our reach already. Then they probably will. But
right.
Otherwise, yeah, I just don't expect many shenanigans from most teams in terms of seeding. I guess some teams may try to angle their way into Utah, as we talked about before.
Right,
if there is an unexpected injury or someone has to sit out for COVID, maybe they do then. But I mean, I think just given how long these teams have been off and given how few games they have before the playoffs start, I think they really are, most of these teams are going to realize we need this time to get these guys back into playing shape and ready to, used to this environment. They need to be acclimated to no fans in the stands, this weird neutral court scenario. So when round one starts in 8 games, they are well adjusted and can hit the ground running game one.
Right. And for next season.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much do you think that is factoring in? Do you think there are teams in this thing that are basically deciding just to go to Orlando just so they can get additional reps and being a little bit more prepared, I want to say, for next season?
Are we sure there's going to be a next season?
Let's play it optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a large part of it for the Wizards, who, again, are going down there knowing they have zero chance of making the playoffs. I'm sure it's... because, we're hearing all of the talk about the teams that got left out really want to have some sort of training camp or mini camp with all of these teams together, just so it isn't 9 months before they play organized basketball again.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm sure that's a big part.
And there are some issues there because apparently Steve Kerr was not all that enthused about that idea. Mm-hmm. But teams like Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, for obvious reasons, because they're rebuilding, or at least, trying to get to that next level, they're very aggressive in wanting to get reps, which I get. So I wonder what's going to happen there. Sam Emick reported that, there are a string of teams, who didn't make it, who are really interested in doing this. So I would be really interested to see what came about that. I mean, where they would go, because it probably wouldn't be Florida, I would imagine.
No, can't imagine.
No. I mean, it was meant in jest, but people picked it up and thought it was fun and not a bad idea. I want teams to just basically go to one of the safest places in Europe and then just kind of start this weird league with EuroLeague teams as well and have a global league for just a year if things are looking bleak in fall.
Yeah. Although I can't imagine many countries being excited to welcome in hundreds of Americans.
That is funny that you said that, because that was much of the response that I got on Twitter as well. Yes.
Yeah, right. I think for all the Americans listening, I think we're stuck here for a while, unfortunately. Let's wrap up by talking. We already hit Avery Bradley earlier, but there have been a couple other notable withdrawals so far. We're still waiting to hear about Victor Oladipo as well. Davis Bertans is one of them. He withdrew. He's going to be a free agent this offseason and correctly decided that 8 games is not worth a career-threatening injury, just, you know, given the career year he had. And he's going to be one of the most desirable free agents on the market, as we discussed in the when we went through all the sad positions in free agency. What are your thoughts on Bertans opting out?
Well, I get it for everyone who's opted out. So this is going to be like one of those placeholder responses that you can use for everyone who decided not to join.
I will ask about the impact on the team for everyone else, but for this one, it seems so obvious because the Wizards are just so completely screwed without him that it didn't even seem worth asking.
No, of course not. He's preparing to sign with Atlanta, by the way, because I wrote an article about that. So that needs to happen now.
As well, he should.
Yeah, I love that fit. Look, this is all such a weird thing. And of course, if you're an upcoming free agent or you have some monetary, potential monetary consequences coming from this, i.e. getting injured and losing millions of dollars, for what is ultimately a league-wide cash grab, I get not wanting to do that. And, you know, some people will say, well, if you're under contract, you should play. Well, but at the same time, this is not exactly, you know, the standard NBA protocol. So I think it's fair, given everything that's going on, that players just have this opportunity to opt out. Sure, like they will sacrifice a part of their paycheck. Because they're not playing, and that's fair. But ultimately, this is the choice of those players to basically say, I'm willing to sacrifice this to earn more down the road or, you know, not get COVID, which is pretty significant because one thing we haven't talked about is that there could be some serious long-term consequences physically as well of having COVID. Like the NBA players who have it and or had it, we really don't know how they're going to look in 5 years' time. Like their health, their overall health could be lessened in 5 years. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, avoiding that at all costs. I get that. And I respect that to like a very, very large degree.
Yeah. And I think that's probably some of the other notable opt-outs. One was Trevor Ariza. I believe he had like a month visitation window for his son, if I read that correctly. So he's decided to, that was going to overlap with the season. So he's decided to take advantage of that instead. And then Willie Cauley-Stein of the Mavericks, we talked about earlier briefly, he's going to become a father in July and he's wants to be there for that. Hell, for both of them, the timing of it isn't great already. Just in terms of the timing of the season conflicts with these big life events for both of them, which isn't ideal. But also, I mean, as you said, they just may not want to be around. Like if I'm Willie Cauley-Stein, I probably don't want to be around my newborn and my very pregnant and or recovering from giving birth wife. If I think I've had a higher probability of being exposed to COVID, like he's probably going to lock himself in his house for a couple months. And I don't blame him for doing that.
We really need to take some time here and just applaud Trevor Ariza, by the way.
Yeah.
He effectively paid $1.7 million just to spend a month with his kid.
Yeah.
If that is not dad of the year material, if that is not something that is brought up in dad of the year discussions or voting or whatever, then that game is rigged. That is a father of the year candidate right there.
Yeah. And Ariza, that's one who I do want to talk about, the impact on the team, especially because he was playing pretty well with the Blazers. And the Blazers were a team that, you know, I had circled as a potential dark horse to, you know, before the schedule stuff came out. Like they were getting Nurkic back, they're getting Zach Collins back. I thought we were going to see the full strength Blazers for the first time all year. and, you know, add Dame, CJ Whiteside to that mix, Carmelo as well, all of a sudden that's a pretty interesting team. Now, without a reason, with Rodney Hood still out, I think that's a big blow for the Blazers.
They just lost their best perimeter player. I mean, yeah. Or not the wing player, I should rather say wing, not because Dame and CJ are perimeter players, but wing player.
Right,
they lost their most important wing player. Ariza, despite his age, still incredibly agile, you know, a very, very good defender, can hit the three ball, isn't afraid to just use open driving lanes, is an underrated passer as well, I think. He really developed that part of the game over the past couple of years. He's just smart, and he's a positive voice in the locker room. It's a huge loss, and it's partly why I look at the Blazers and just going, why? Mm-hmm. There's really no point. I mean, I get it. Like, when the ball's tipped off and Dame can go ape, I mean, that's not a problem. But, man, you know, what's the likelihood of Dame averaging 50?
Right.
I guess it's there. He did it late earlier this year, but I don't get it. It's such a big blow. Even fully healthy, I wouldn't get it. But Ariza out, and, you know, Nurkic is presumably not completely ready yet. It's just a matter of him getting back and getting some reps in. Like, he's not going to be the Nurkic of last season. It's a bad cocktail.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to see them jumping the Pelicans and Kings, especially, like, performing better than Pelicans and Kings, who they are tied with record-wise to force that play-in game against, or play-in tournament, I should say, against Memphis. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's a huge loss for them, even though it might not. It's similar to Avery Bradley, where it's, like, not one of your best players, but it's one of your better role players.
Yeah,
and that's going to have a sneaky big impact on your team, even though, you know, you're still going to have Dame, CJ, LeBron, Anthony Davis. It still hurts because that was an impactful player.
Right.
The other guy, we talked Bradley earlier. The other guy who we're still waiting on, apparently. I saw this tweet from Woj in one of my few times on Twitter this week. Was Victor Oladipo. He said he's going to test out his quad, his torn quad tendon over the next couple days. I mean, I guess he's already been doing it. But they're still awaiting official word whether he is going to come back. If he does not, Mort, do the Pacers turn into first round roadkill?
Oh, I mean, that almost seems unfair because they played well without him. To the best of their abilities. I mean, Sabonis is an all-star, a worthy one. You know, Brogdon is a legitimate two-way player who didn't even shoot all that well from the field during the regular season. So I have to assume that this is a chance for him to actually get back on track. This was a guy who was like 50, 40, 90 guy last year, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of potential there. The Miles Turner is a DPOY candidate, has been for a couple of years now. Yeah, there's a lot to like. It's just a matter of, do they have enough? And I don't want to be there, if I'm the Pacers, where if Depot isn't ready, and if you kind of have to carry him a little bit, then I'd rather be without. A healthy Depot, fine, great, welcome to the team. But if I have to overcome like some shooting deficiencies because he's not in it, like he's not ready to contribute at a high level yet because he's still like working his way back, then it might be better to just kind of say, hey, rest up, heal up, let's run with what we have and let the chips fall where they may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the issue is that Jeremy Lamb is also out.
Right.
So they're getting a little thin in the backcourt. I mean, Brogdon is there, but like, yeah, otherwise I feel great about Sabonis, Turner, TJ Warren.
Yeah.
You know, now you're relying on the Holiday brothers, McBuckets, TJ McConnell, like all of whom are fine rotation players, but you're not necessarily excited about any of them as a potential starter.
No, you're definitely not going to get a lot of offensive production from your guards if both Lamb and Depot is out. Absolutely. Right. I mean, I guess that would be Brockton's chance, though. Like, it couldn't be set up better for Brockton to just kind of bounce back then. Like, here you go, Malcolm. Take all the backcourt shots that you want. It's right there. You have complete freedom from the guard spot.
Or maybe this is finally Miles Turner's long-awaited breakout.
You know what? I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, thrice, four times, five times, shame on me, right?
Yeah.
I'm just not there yet. I hope that I'm wrong. If he suddenly becomes an offensive player, I'll definitely be very, very happy. So far, I don't believe it. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm done hoping.
Yeah. That is completely reasonable. Well, Mort, I think that is a good place for us to wrap up. Thank you, everyone. As always, it is good for us to be back and for us to be talking in real time instead of just recording some redrafts from 3 weeks ago. So we hope you enjoy it. I promise. No more big cross-country moves in my immediate future. So we will be here to react to the latest as we get closer to the hypothetical start of the season in a month.
Yep.
In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.